everyone, it's Lacey Scholes from VH1's Rock of Love, and this is Talk of Love, the new podcast. This isn't just reality, this is real life. Hey everyone, it's Lacey motherfucking Scholes, and this is Talk of Love, episode 35. So we have Ricky Rackman coming up in a few minutes, which I'm so excited about. Ricky is just like hysterical and amazing. But today I have something a little special for the opening segment. We are literally going to talk of love because today, which is Monday, October 5th, is my husband and I's wedding anniversary. So I brought my husband, Johnny. Hey, baby.
Hi, honey.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
It's been 7 years.
Yes.
You know what that means? 7 year itch.
I know. And exclusive for five.
Right. Yeah. Oh, wait. Has it been five? I thought we were exclusive. Like, what time is it?
Five months. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really funny because, so we've been together for 8 years, right?
Years,
married
yeah.
for seven. It's funny the whole.
Was it a full year that we were together before we got married?
I think so. Yeah.
It was almost a year. I don't think it was a full year.
Something like that. We got married pretty quick. Yeah. But the 7 year itch thing is always funny because I'm like, well, you know, there's the pool guy. So what are my options?
Yeah. There's the yard guy.
The yard guy. I know. It's always pool guy, yard guy. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So when's Johnny going to be back?
The Santa Claus across the street.
There you go. That's true. I know. And for you, I guess it's like the...
The Asian lady next door.
Yeah, she's pretty hot.
There was a prostitute living next door to us at one point, remember?
Yeah, that's true.
That we weren't there.
Yeah, but you're not going to pay to cheat on me.
Oh, no. Like, she's going to pay me. She has the money, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, that's
so
true.
So then she can then
see.
Yeah.
You're very smart when it comes to that kind of stuff. You got to get something out of it besides just, you know, you're making money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of.
And cultivating disease.
Right. There you go. Yeah. I know. So yeah. So I actually was reading up on the 7 year itch because I was curious. Like, is that really a thing? And actually, it is a thing. But usually, it happens at year four or year five. So statistically. Marriages or long-term relationships, if they're going to be like at their point where they can't deal with each other anymore, it's statistically year four and year five. So there is a 7 year itch, but it's really a 4 year itch,
so
if that makes
13,
sense.
13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 17 or 18 would have been the time, 2017 or 18.
Yeah, that we would have gotten divorced. That's when you were cheating on me. I'm just kidding, everybody. We don't cheat on each other. We just like to constantly threaten it. Keep us on our toes.
Yes.
No, I would never, ever, ever do that. Dude.
No.
Not
till the end.
Right, exactly. Yeah. If you're on your deathbed, like if you're unconscious, maybe.
That's the best way to end it.
Because you wouldn't know, right?
Yeah. To just put a button on it and just.
So you were recovering. Everybody was super worried about you, myself included, because you had insane surgery and now you're basically the Terminator because you have titanium in your neck.
Yeah. Jinx told me I'm now more metal than ever.
Yeah, you're definitely metal.
That's good.
Yeah. So tell everybody how you're doing after your surgery.
I'm fine. I just, it's weird. Like I'm in pain, but I'm in pain muscularly, not where it used to be. So that's good. I can tell that it's not the same. And it's really cool. I mean, you remember driving for more than 30 minutes. Like,
yeah, you were always
in pain.
Yeah, from herniated discs.
Yeah. And it's annoying. It's annoying because I can tell it did affect my personality. In fact, I posted a picture on Instagram today about my surgery and recovery and stuff like that. And then another guy who I sort of know is a tattoo artist. And tattoo artists are always extending their necks. So they have similar problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he's about to get the surgery too. And so he goes like, I'm really nervous. I'm like, no, don't be nervous about the surgery. It's just annoying to deal with the recovery.
Yeah. Well, good thing that you're cute because it doesn't matter if you're being an asshole because you're still good to look at.
I will say the edibles have helped. Marijuana edibles.
Yeah. And you never did those before. That wasn't your thing at all, but they've been really helping you.
Yeah.
Well, so let's get into, so on the Facebook private page for the contributors, I was talking about our wedding anniversary and a couple of them had some good questions for us. And one of the questions that came up was, what are some of the more romantic things that we've done for each other? And
like pushing each other in bushes and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. See? Yeah. You get it. Well, actually, it's funny that you say that because I don't consider myself to be a very romantic person.
I don't consider you to be romantic either. Yeah.
But I do like the fact that we can like clown around and joke around and fuck with each other. And then that's always what made me attracted to you because you have the same kind of sense of humor as I do with that.
I think that that's better. And I think that that's the longevity of a relationship. Like the relationships that I know that I look at, whether it be celebrities or people I know and respect, the people that have the longest relationship, the people that can joke with each other and have fun. Like I think I told you about this when we first were together, this couple I knew, I was friends with him. We went out to dinner sometime and then like he he went up to go to the bathroom and she went up to go to the bathroom. And then she goes, I'm going to be right back. I'm going to the bathroom. He's like, all right, cool. So we're done. We're done relationship. Like, this is over now. She's like, oh yeah, I'm going to see somebody else now. And I thought that was so funny. Like, it's just this casual thing that they just did. I'm like, did you guys just break up in front of me? It was just really funny.
They're fucking with each other.
But I think with you and I, like, I think one of the greatest things about our relationship is that we can joke around and have fun. And I think that we've had serious problems, obviously, of stuff that's gone on to us, not necessarily in the relationship, but to us. And we've overcome it, I think, with humor.
Yeah, absolutely. Dealing with like traumas and stuff like that. Yeah, 100%. But I will say that you definitely have a romantic side. You're more romantic than I am, but you've done some pretty great stuff without making it mushy and uncomfortable, which I really appreciate with you. And one thing that stands out in my mind is when we got married, I remember I really didn't want to have a traditional wedding. And I know that you were like on board that as well. And you were the one that was like, we need an Elvis priest. He's got to like wear Viking horns. I'm like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if I even attempt to wear white, I will be struck down.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
It's been a long time since I was a virgin. But yeah, I remember we were talking about like, you know, what do you want to do that is traditional? What do you want to exclude that's traditional? Mm-hmm. And you and I had talked about the vows, and I was like, the vows to me, it seems so forced and you know, I like things that come from the heart. I don't want something I'm going to like plan out. And so we just decided basically like to ditch the vows. And but then little did I know, you were actually working on a song that was expressing your feelings basically for me, for the relationship. And you surprised me with that. And I remember we were up there and we were going back and forth with our Elvis priest getting married, and you had them play the song over the speakers. And I was blown away. And it was just such a beautiful song. And nobody had ever done something like that for me before. And especially the fact that we are...
Didn't Chris write bitch for you? or
yeah, my ex-boyfriend Chris, who was my old guitar player for Nocturne, wrote a lot of songs that were about me and then had me sing them. That was the best part. But what would you say is great? What would you say is some of your fond memories of us?
I mean, there's so many. Like, I think we just were saying how just the humor was really got us through a lot. And
well, I remember the one that was probably the most challenging for me was the guitar.
Yeah.
Gift. No, I was going to
say. Yeah. So that's what I was going to say. Like, there was a time, I guess it was 2014. Maybe.
I think we'd been married for like a year.
Yeah. We were relatively new. We were at Mulholland. We were at the Mulholland house. I remember that. And then I remember you. I had been complaining and lamenting about a guitar that I had to sell during times where I was super broke, which, you know, happens so often in an artist's life. And I had to sell a 1971 Gibson SG guitar. And I'm a guitar player. I'm a singer primarily. I'm a guitar player, though, secondary. And this guitar is not really it's a lead guitar. So it's really high end. But high end is in tone. I like it a lot. And it was just more of like a beautiful guitar for me. It was a piece of art that I loved. And it's fun to play, but I loved that guitar so much, and I had to sell it. And I lament to you, like, oh man, I had to sell this guitar. I really shouldn't have sold that. It was stupid.
You used to talk about that guitar all the time.
Because it just was a mistake. You know what I mean? Like, you sell guitars and it's like, you never get what they're worth. And there's sentimental value, and they're just great pieces of, you know, gear. And anyway, you listened to me and behind my back went around. And the only connection that you knew that I had to this guitar was an ex. And you're like, because she had a friend who was going to buy it. And you were like, okay, that's the only connection.
Your ex helped facilitate the sale of this. She knew somebody was going to buy it from you.
Right. And then so that's all you had as far as information of where this guitar is. And so you went behind my back, contacted this person, said, look, I need this guitar back for him. Where did it go?
I was like, I will pay triple the price. And actually, right. I tried to find...
And then you found the guy, though.
Yeah, bought the guitar. Because originally, I tried to find the guitar, just like a copy of it.
Another version of it.
Another version of it. And I couldn't find it. Yeah. So I'm like, fuck, I'm going to have to go contact this bitch that he used to hang out with that I wasn't particularly fond of. And I think you and her had a falling out as well. So it was super awkward. And I had to pay her to even put me in touch with the guy who had bought it. And then had to offer him money. And I was like, I don't even know that either of these two people are going to even answer my phone call.
Right.
And then not only did she agree to connect me with him, but then he agreed to sell it to
right.
me.
And he sold it to you. You're like, all right, I'll pay double for it. And then he goes like, I can't sell it for double. And you're like, fuck. Because he told me this afterwards. You're like, I can't. God damn, how much more does he want from me? He's going to screw me on this. And then he's like, I'm only going to be able to sell it to you for what I bought.
Yeah, he was so nice because he was like, I'm so touched by your story. Because I was like, please sell me the guitar back. You don't understand how much my husband talks about the guitar. Mm. So then I wrapped it. I remember there's really no real way to like wrap it.
Well, it didn't have a case.
Right. And I just wrapped it. Just like paper around the neck and the body. And then I presented it to you. And you looked so confused.
I was very
confused.
Why
are you getting me a guitar?
Yeah, because I had a ton of guitars. But it was just like presented me with this thing and it looked like a guitar. I'm like, what? But I don't know why, but my brain didn't go like, it's a guitar. I was like, that looks like a guitar. Why did she, you know, wrap a, you know, car?
It wasn't like a giant dildo.
Yeah, or something like that, you know. But it was...
But the look on your face...
It was shock.
Well, you weren't... I remember you were confused. Mm. And then the way that you knew... The way that I knew also that it was your guitar is because you had a sticker on the back of it. And I remember you turned around, looked at it, and you're like, it's the sticker. Like, it took you a second to register that this was the guitar.
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember that was the sweetest moment that I think I had experienced from any lover or you know, significant other ever.
I was really happy I was able to do that because it was a long shot. And it just made me so happy I was able to do that because you always do... You were like so thoughtful. And in fact, I know we got to wrap this up, but I just wanted to say real quick, I always bring this. So this gargoyle, actually my mom, who you guys know, I talk about her a lot. She gave me this and I always loved this gargoyle. And then Chris, my ex-boyfriend, who we were just talking about, when he and I were together, he was just, you know, messing around. He threw something across the room and hit this and knocked it down and broke it, shattered it. And I was really, really upset. And he didn't mean to, but I kept like the broken pieces in a box and just carried them around. And I remember I looked for this everywhere. I couldn't find it. I Googled like every way to Google this. I couldn't find it. And then I told you that story. And the next thing I know, what shows up in the mail, this freaking thing, you like went out and find it. So you always do very thoughtful
things. Did I get that for you before you got me the guitar? Or was it the other way around?
I can't remember. I think it was close to the same time.
Yeah, it was close, huh?
But anyway,
But I think what longevity in a relationship is, I think like what keeps a relationship going and the reason we don't have a 7-year itch or a 4 or 5-year itch or whatever, I think that the reason behind that is the humor. Mm-hmm. And I think like, yeah, you could do romantic things for your lover all day long and whatever. And I think that that's important. But I think the closer you get to a person and the more you're able to joke with them and make them laugh. I think making your partner laugh, you make me laugh every day and I make you laugh every day. And I think that that is what keeps a relationship going. And I think that there's nothing else that can compare to that. I could buy you tons of gifts and take you on expensive vacations and stuff like that. And those would be great for sure. And I know you'd appreciate them. But I think the day-to-day stuff of me joking with you and making you laugh and you joking with me making me laugh shows that we still love and care about each other because I'm doing this only to make you laugh.
Yeah,
so absolutely. I think that that's the key to a healthy relationship.
Especially when it's like dealing with pandemics and stuff like that. It's like you got to bring...
Or the tragedies that we've all gone through, that you and I have gone through. Absolutely. You know, loss of friends, loss of family. You know, loss of reality, you know, like the stuff that we've been through.
We lost our dog recently.
Yeah. So but stuff like, stuff happens. You can't stop that. Like stuff is always going to happen in life. And I think the great thing about our relationship is that we can joke with each other and make each other laugh. And no matter what we're going through, we can make each other laugh and smile.
Well, baby, I love you so much and happy anniversary.
Yeah, my girlfriend's waiting outside, so
I gotta
go.
Yeah. As long as she's hot, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. She's all right.
All right, baby. Well, thank you so much for coming on and happy anniversary and I love you.
I love you, baby. Yeah. Thanks for having me in here.
Yeah.
And congratulations on all your success in this show. And I can't wait to see you at home.
Thank you so much. I will see you soon. And for you guys now, I am so excited. We have Ricky Rackman. So Ricky is best known for being the host of Headbangers Ball. He was also on Loveline. You guys know him as the dean on Charm School. He was also the host on the reunion shows for Rock of Love, Daisy of Love. He's amazing. We all love him. Ricky, hey, nice to see you. How are you?
I am wonderful. I was not aware that this was going to be on camera, and that's why I look so fresh and so clean.
I think you look fantastic. I like the long hair. You look very rock and roll to me.
Ooh, what me look rock and roll?
I know. How weird. I know. We're so used to like G-rated Ricky Rackman.
Where? Yeah, it's crazy. You just don't cut it. And I had no idea we'd grow. I had no idea that I'd still be able to grow my hair long. I still hate long hair. But it just kept on growing. And I'm like, well, there's a lot of people that are my age that have no hair.
No kidding.
And now all those people that gave me shit for not cutting my hair, I mean, when I cut my hair, they all gave me a hard time. And now they're all bald. So now I'm like, hey. So.
Right. Yeah. Like in your face. Absolutely. Yeah. I dig it. I like the long hair. It's, as I said, rock and roll. So, well, cool. So we have so much to talk about. I'm really, really excited. I want to start out by, I've been following your career since like way back in the day. I'm part of the MTV generation. I was born in 1976. And I remember my favorite shows back in the day. And I couldn't stay up late enough to watch them. So I had to videotape them on my VHS, VCR. And of course, one of them was Headbangers Ball, Alternative Nation, 120 Minutes. Like, I just loved all of those shows. So so let's get into that for a second, your life before all of the Rock of Love shows. So tell everybody about your career who doesn't know, because you have a very extensive career. How did this all start?
I would say that for the most part, it all started with the Cat House, which is my club. And you can hear the whole stories in all the Cat House Hollywood podcasts. But basically, I started with my roommate, Tammy, who was the singer in the band Faster Pussycat. And it's a cliche and it's been told 1,000 times. But the truth is, we wanted a place. We were young and we wanted a place where we could get free drinks and meet girls. And so we opened up the Cat House as a rock and roll dance club. And then the club got bigger and bigger. And then Tammy focused more on Faster Pussycat. And then I just took over the Cat House and we'd let bands play. And like every band in the world played the Cat House. And I was very strict. Like I wouldn't let any crap bands play. And I was very tight on what bands would play. And then the club just got bigger and bigger. Then I opened another club called Bordello. And it just got like crazy. And then Axel pretty much helped me get the job at MTV. You know, we were talking about Headbangers Ball or something, and he said, well, if you want to do it, I could make some calls. And that was when Guns N' Roses were the biggest band in the world. So when Axl Rose calls MTV and says, oh, you know, my friend Ricky, and they're like, oh, from the Cat House. Like, people knew who I was just from the Cat House.
That's awesome. It's what a great way to, like, you know, not only be a part of the music industry, but really network yourself and get to know who all these people are, who I'm sure you were a fan of. How old were you when you started that?
21.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't network because I had no intentions. Like when I tell you the Cat House was open to get free drinks and meet girls, I had no idea that I would still be selling, I mean, thousands of t-shirts 35 years later. The Cat House shirts still sell worldwide. And I had no idea that it would turn into that. Even when I did MTV, I was a little bit apathetic on MTV because I knew that when I was going to be on TV that my life would change. But I didn't think that it would be something that people still talk about. Like, I wasn't like, I'm going to network so I can become this TV guy. And then I'm going to be this. It's like, I was just having fun. And I've always had a sense of business. I mean, I started a skateboard company when I was like 16 years old. So I've always been hungry and working all the time. But I couldn't have predicted that it would have gone as long as it did, or that it would get me the notoriety that did. And it was hard because, you know, I'm just some punk kid causing trouble doing all this stuff. And all of a sudden I'm on TV and doing all these crazy stuff. And there's people criticizing me, or it's weird. And you know this, Lacey, as probably even better than I do. When all these people that don't even know you have bad stuff to say about you, and some of it can be completely preposterous.
Yeah.
And I know I don't have to tell you that because, you know, I've always been cool with you and we've always got along great. And people would always say, oh, is Lacey really a bitch? I'm like, well, no, she's not. It's television, you know, and you did what you needed. You know, the thing is, and I'll give an example, which is so funny because I never talk about the reality shows that I do, but I'm not proud of it. I just never talk about it. But I'll give an example. In a perfect world, Jessica Kinney, who was on that show, was just like everything. She was great. She was a clean, wholesome, beautiful, very smart girl. But because there was no drama or chaoticness or psychoness, nobody, you know, she didn't raise the bar, even though she's very talented. And I think the world of her, I haven't seen her in a couple of decades, but she never raised the bar. You need drama. You need something crazy. And everybody's looking at you to do this, to do that. And I'm just some like troublemaker in the streets of Hollywood. And all of a sudden I'm like a public eye, you know, and it was very bizarre. It still is bizarre.
Yeah. Well, that completely makes sense to me, the way that you worded that. And it sounds to me like everything that you did leading up to getting onto TV was very organic for you. And you just like genuinely love music and love the metal scene. And I think that that just came across to everybody. And it's interesting, though, to me, because if that wasn't necessarily your aspiration to get onto TV and be a host and all that, you are really, really good at it. It seems like something that you set out to do and work towards. But the fact that it just happens like organically for you, I think is really cool. And the other thing I really like about you, and of course, this is appealing to me of all people, I really like your like no fucks given attitude. And you really have no filter. And it sucks when it's directed at you. but I always got where you were coming from. And I loved your just brutal honesty about things.
I've always been that way. And the problem is, I think, when I look back at it, when you're 21 and all of a sudden you've got every band in the world knows you and all these girls want to date you. Or if your friends aren't available, they wanted to date my friends. And if they weren't available, they go out with me. But all of a sudden, I'm this kid and you get all this stuff. And I became cocky and I watched old interviews that I did. And I was like, wow, I would hate me. Like, I know that I've changed a lot and I've changed so much. And I'm not the same person that I was, but I've always been a guy that, you know, I think the difference now is I'm more open about real stuff, whether it's feelings or sobriety or people that I think are, you know, I talk about everything except politics now, especially. I wish I could. But now I can't talk politics because it's a lose-lose situation.
Right, right. I completely feel you on that. Yeah, so I think that we all grow. I mean, if you were in your 20s when this started, you know, I mean, I was an asshole. I'm an asshole anyway, but I was particularly so in my 20s as well. And of course, the older that we get, and if we get married or have a significant other, I feel like that just kind of naturally mellows us all out a bit because we have to know, okay, I can't just behave however the fuck I want because now I have somebody that I love and care about that I have to answer to because I respect them. So it does teach you to kind of like check yourself a little bit. Would you say that's true for you? Do you think the women in your life helped you get to that place, or was it just you became self-reflective or introspective?
Well, most of the women in my life were not good. As my mother said, I didn't make good choices, but some of the women were great and I wasn't a great guy. But, you know, I had never really found the right person or it wasn't the right time for me until now. I mean, nobody knew, unless it was like a famous porn star or something, nobody knew who I dated or who I was married to, or nobody knew any of that stuff. And because I kept it very personal, but the relationship that I've been in for the past couple of years, everybody knows about it. I'm a better person because of her. You know, any of the videos that we shoot riding across the country or whatever we do, I don't mind sharing with her because in many avenues, she's much more famous than I am anyway. So it's different. She has changed me a lot and I think for the better. And I'm very open about that stuff, which I never was before. But I still fall into, I think I'm more careful on saying stuff that might hurt people, but I also have a much, much less tolerance for, can I swear or is it better not to
Fuck
swear?
Yeah, you can swear.
Okay. I have a lot less tolerance for bullshit. That's why in my whole career, I've never said the word fans, but you know, I'll do like meet and greet things. And when I do my rides, I'll go out and like, I'll just hang out with people without a posse or something like that. And sometimes it's 4 people, sometimes it's 100 people. And I've always been like that, especially lately. And, but if somebody's kind of, you know, just cocky or an asshole or something, I have very little tolerance for that. And I am more accepting of just like good people. And, especially with the motorcycle riding I've done, cause I've been all over North America and a couple other countries on a motorcycle. And I meet people of all walks of life. And I enjoy that. I think I'm different, but I still fall into my bad habits once in a while. And I get very frustrated and angry. And, you know, sometimes it's hard. You know, my career after MTV, I let all my depression and everything destroy me to the point that, you know, I had a very successful talk radio show on the radio, was making more money than I ever made. And I ended up beating up a DJ and going to jail.
Yeah.
So I lost everything.
I was going to ask you about that. That was one thing that's really remarkable to me because you really have had, you know, high highs and you've had low lows, But even when everything fell apart for you, you were able to get past it and get right back up and keep on going and get your career back going again, which is impressive because that doesn't necessarily happen for everybody. But so when did this whole because I read about the DJ thing, but I didn't hear any details about that. When did that happen and what was the context with that?
I'm thinking it was 98 maybe. And it was at a time that I was having a really hard time dealing with depression and other chaoticness. And I had gone from, you know, Headbangers Ball to hosting Loveline to getting that syndicated. And I thought I could do whatever I want. I was so cocky. And I started my own talk radio show, which incidentally was called the Triple R, and the new podcast I'm doing called the Triple R. And I was going out with a girl that there's nothing wrong with her, but we had a very public, toxic relationship. And, you know, like I said, I'm still that guy from Hollywood. And when other DJs were talking smack about me and going on and then talking smack about her, I went to the radio station and beat the crap out of the guys and it ended up being the top story on the news. And when I was only in jail for like a day and a half or whatever. And when I got out, I thought, wow, I'm like notorious DJ. Everybody's going to want to hire me. And nobody would hire me because they believe, which is true, that they believe that if they hired me and I got in a fight with somebody, they'd be held liable for hiring somebody that they know was in jail for getting in a fight with another employee, even though like I'm not a violent guy at all. I ended up having to get a job as a car salesman. I lost absolutely everything and had to claw my way back up. And I'm at a really good place in my life right now. And I still haven't grown up, but I'm as old as Stuart and I'm still doing things that people that are, you know, much younger than me are doing.
Well, people weren't really talking about depression and, you know, mental health back then. So it makes sense that like, if you're going through that and it's the 90s or even like the early 2000s, you know, where do you go? What do? When you're having these emotions and these frustrations that you just get to a place where you just can't control them anymore. So, you know, that does make sense to me, especially for that time period. But the fact that you're able to get through it and, you know, in a relatively short amount of time also, I think that's pretty awesome. And it says a lot about you and your work ethics and all that. One of my favorite moments with Headbangers Ball. So I love metal. I love a lot of the music from the 80s, but I personally also love grunge. You know, I was a big fan of Alice in Chains. I was a big fan of Nirvana and still am. And I know that a lot of like metalheads got frustrated with the grunge movement. And
I didn't.
Well, I remember when Kurt Cobain was on, you were interviewing him and he wore his ball gown. He's like, well, it's a Headbangers Ball. So I wear my ball gown. And you looked so annoyed. Like, why did you send me this guy? Like, why, what am I doing here? And it was hilarious from your perspective. And it was hilarious from his perspective. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah. Here's the deal with that. I loved Nirvana. I loved Nirvana from the album Bleach.
You know? Really?
Negative Creep is a heavy song.
Oh, amazing. Amazing.
And so when Nirvana started to get big and they were going to be on Headbangers Ball, I was really, really excited. And so what my MO was is if it was a band that I really liked, I'd go meet them and then I'd try to like coerce them into playing the Cat House. And it worked a lot. So I go in there to meet Nirvana and, you know, most of the bands that made it big were bands that I had been friends with all along. I didn't know anybody in Nirvana at all. So I walk into the green room. Kurt Cobain is passed out on the floor. Couldn't even get up to like meet me. I'm like, oh, whatever. So then he walked out there and I was all excited. And when somebody, you know, if you saw like, for instance, the shows with Alice in Chains is a great example. Those guys were just goofy and having fun, and Chris Cornell Bowling were having so much fun. But when, if you meet somebody and you're all excited and they're like, and they're like, they're on dope, it's just like, it sucks.
Yeah.
And the truth is about the ball gown is when he finally said to me, yeah, it's a ball. So I wore the gown. I didn't get it. I didn't get it till like 10 years later. Oh, it's a ball gown. I didn't get it. And, you know, people said, oh, Ricky was so uncomfortable and he was so out of his element. I'm like, no, I was just kind of like, dude, you're lame.
I got annoyed was the emotion. I didn't get that you were like uncomfortable. I just got that you're just like, really? Like you're sending me this guy with this fucking ball gown. So I got annoyed.
The problem was if it was another band, you know, I'd be like, get the fuck out. Who are you? But the truth is like, here's a band that I really, really dug. So much that, you know, after they were on Headbangers Ball and then, you know, other album In Utero and all these other albums came out, and I was just like, oh my God, this band is great. But he was just kind of like, eh. And, you know, and it was him and Chris. Dave wasn't there, so.
That's such a great story. I love that. So let's get into Rock of Love, Charm School, Daisy of Love. So one thing that I think is really cool, I will say that I also am a big fan of industrial music. And the problem with industrial kids and also with like metal people is they tend to get a little bit elitist. And I know that there's some of the musicians in the metal world, I'm not going to name names, are kind of shitty about reality TV shows. And they, and anybody that's a musician that does reality, they, I feel like some musicians think that's like beneath them and they kind of shit on it. I'm like, you know what? If a gig is a gig, get over yourself, you know? And so I think it's really cool that you did these shows. And I think it's cool that Sharon did these shows. I mean, I was always a big fan of Ozzy, of course. And I fucking love Sharon. And it was funny because when I got invited to do Charm School, I wasn't sure if I wanted to do it or not, because I'd already done Rock of Love, obviously. And I was like, well, who's going to be the headmistress? Because I only knew Monique, you know? And they weren't going to tell me at first. And then so I was like, well, you know what? I don't know. Then I'll get back with you. And they're like, okay, we can tell you. And I'm like, man, you guys fold quick. And they told me it was Sharon. I was like, holy shit, that is fucking amazing. And I just love her. I love the whole family. And then when I found out it was you as well, I was like, this is going to be amazing. I didn't know as much about Daniela, although I have like mad respect for her. But so walk everybody through, myself included, how did you end up getting on that show? Did you know Sharon before that? And how did Daniela get, like, walk us through, how did that happen?
Well, Daniela I've known since she was 17.
Oh, really?
Daniela, I was one of the people that helped bring in Daniela because I've known her forever, because she was always with Gilby, and I've known Gilby since we were younger, you know. But the whole thing was, they first brought me in to do the Rock of Love reunion, which was that the big show that we did, and for the first season. And I loved it. I mean, it was never a thing like, oh, I'm questioning my credibility. It was like, holy fuck, this is going to be so rad. I'm going to be like the metal Jerry Springer. And that's what I was. They prepared cue cards and I threw them away. Everything I did was off the cuff, live. And I thought it was great. I really thought it was going to lead to something else, because I really enjoyed doing those shows. And it was great. And then they had me do another one, and it was great. And then they said, hey, we're going to have you come on. We want to have you a judge on another show. I'm like, I can't wait. What is it? And it was Charm School, and you're going to be with Sharon Osbourne. I love Sharon. This is going to be great. And who should we bring in as a girl? And so I suggested Daniela. And that show sucked. I didn't like that show at all.
How come you didn't like it?
I didn't get to be me. I think I could have offered a lot more. And finally, when the show was done, and I said, I'm not going to do these shows anymore. I go, and they brought me in. They go, we have a show for you. I said, look, I don't want to do these shows anymore. I don't think that it's like, I'll do the reunions because those are fun, but I'm not going to do these shows anymore. And they go, well, we have a show that you're going to be like the biggest part of, and all we want is you to be you. And I was like, okay, well, tell me about it. And they brought up the idea of Daisy of Love. Daisy of Love was one of the best times I had. I really liked doing that show.
Yeah.
I liked the guys. I liked the girls. I liked doing it. They really let me be me. You know, if people think like, oh, look at him, he's being this, and he's acting like, I'm like, no, that's me. And the truth is that I really did care about Daisy even after the show. So I really enjoyed doing Daisy of Love a lot. That was a lot of fun.
Well, that makes me happy to hear. And I will say, I watched all of those shows and I loved the guys. In fact, we've had Sinister and Chi-Chi on the podcast.
Great guys, aren't they?
Oh, amazing. I just had London last week. I had 12 Pack, and just the guys are hilarious. I feel like, I mean, of course, the show was about Daisy and her personality, but I feel like the guys could just like have a show just of themselves, you know, and it would work because they're just such characters, all of them. I thought it was amazing. So I was going to ask you about that. I like that you like the guys, because I was thinking that you were like watching all of this and like, these guys are like train wrecks, you know, but I like that you liked a lot of them.
After the show, I went to Vegas with three of them. 12-pack. As soon as I showed up at the show, I'm like, this guy's a freaking dork. I'm going to hate that guy. And he was so great. And the truth is that, you know, I mean, there were certain guys that were like, that if you could tell, if there was somebody on the show that I acted like I didn't like, it was because I didn't like them. Mm-hmm. And that carried through after the show as well.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I mean, they really let me be me on that show, and I was a big part of that show. So I enjoyed that very much.
Well,
that
was a good time. Interesting to hear, because I do feel like we got two very different Rickies, from Charm School to Daisy of Love. And I got to be honest, you know, I've hung out with you a lot after all of these shows and kind of gotten to know you. But in those shows, there was like, you know, there was like hard ass Ricky, and you were like pretty hard on a lot of the girls. But you're also still really funny too. So I always liked how you were hard on them. It was just always hilarious.
Well, that was from the heart. I mean, some of the girls I liked, and some of them I think are just like so lame. Like there's like a couple girls that I like, if I had the opportunity, even though I'm not really that guy anymore, but if I had the opportunity to say something mean, I would. I think they're lame.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about Charm School first, and then let's get into Daisy of Love. With Charm School, so you were saying basically you felt like you weren't able to truly be yourself. Did you feel the producers were just really guiding you a certain way, or did you think that happened in editing?
People know they can't really guide me in a certain direction, but I didn't feel like I was a very small part of that show, I feel. And, you know, a lot of it was like comments from me or things that I didn't. And I still had fun because, you know, before we're taping, I'm getting to hang out with Sharon, who's great. And I'm getting to hang out with Daniela, who I've known forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I still had a good time, but, and, you know, I got paid great for that show. But it was at a point when I was working a lot and I just said, this is doing nothing for my career at all. And if it's doing nothing for my career and I'm not enjoying it that much, you know, why bother? And that's why I didn't want to do Daisy of Love. And I'm so glad I ended up doing that show.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree. And I'm glad you ended up doing that too, because you were great on it. But so one thing that we talk about a lot on the show is the producers. And I personally love the producers, and I got to know a lot of them as individuals. I'm still friends with several of them even today. But at the same time, I always tell people like the producers were the true villains of the show, because they were so good at their jobs, and they were so good at, like, you know, pulling the puppet strings. And I always wondered, and people always ask me this, and I honestly don't know the answer. So obviously, Rock of Love, Brett Michaels, people often wondered how much was Brett choosing the girls versus the producers. And same thing with Charm School. I personally believe, but I don't know this for sure, that the producers had more to, as far as the decision of who was going to make it through to the end. I thought that was more of a producer decision more so than like Brett Michaels. And same thing with Charm School. I assumed that it was more so the producers than it was you guys. But can you shed some light on that? Like, how did that work? Like, how did you guys decide? Was it a group decision between you and Shannon, Daniela, and the producers? Or did the producers decide and they came and tell you guys who was going to go home? Like, how did that work exactly?
Nobody ever told us who is going to go home. But I mean, they sort of, you know, planted seeds a little bit, this and that. I mean, you know, that girl, Megan. I just wanted her gone. Like, every day they said, who do you want gone? I just said, Meg. She's just so pathetic. And I wanted that girl gone. And pretty much that's all I cared about, was just her getting her off the show as soon as possible. And everybody else, it was just kind of, we just go with the flow, and if things make sense. And I understand they want stuff that's good for the show. They want it to be entertaining. I mean, you know, I thought Brett Michaels made, you know, bad choices a couple of times. And I think I even said on some of the reunions, I don't think he picked the right girl. Mm-hmm. And he actually didn't. I mean, that was shown to him several times. And I guess, you know, obviously they're in a business of making an entertaining show. And, you know, the one thing that they always said is like, and you know this, that they might say, hey, Lacey, we're going to go eat veal. And you would go, what? And then the next thing you know, they have a question and you're going, and it was used from something else. You know, they'll use your interactions. They never did that with me. And that was something that I made sure they would never, because they even said to me, especially with Daisy of Love, they said, Ricky, our job is not to make you look stupid. Our job is to make you look like the voice of reason. Mm. So whenever I said that, and especially on Daisy of Love and Charm School too, whenever I gave my opinions, they never told me what to say. I always said what I felt.
Yeah.
And Sharon and Danielle did the same thing, really. I mean, they weren't telling us what to say. They wanted to see what we would say and see maybe if they could make it better. But, you know, it worked out great. I mean, you know.
Well, the reason I thought that producers had a lot to do with it is because, honestly, I went on these shows just, like, having a good time. I want to make good TV. I want to be the villain because I know the villain always gets the most camera time. And I want it to be wild and fun. And I felt like the girls were pretty tame and pretty mellow. And I was like, I just want to like stir the shit up and make it just a great show. And also it's fun to be a villain, you know, it's rock and roll, but
you're great at it.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. It was really fun. And, honestly, I'm surprised I was able to get anybody on this podcast because so many of them like hated my guts, but I think everybody starts to get it after a period of time, spending some time with me. But the point of me bringing this up is in Rock of Love and Charm School, I should have been sent home a long time ago. And, you know, because I caused so much trouble in the house. And even on Charm School, you pointed that out. I remember there was one moment where you said something to me where it was like, how come, Lacey, every time there's some kind of crazy drama, somehow you're at the center of it, you know? So in my mind, I'm like, this is working for me. I'm going to keep doing it. And that's why that is going to be my insurance for the producers keeping me to the very end. And so that's why I was thinking that it was more like a producer's decision more so than you guys.
Sure, yeah.
But you're saying that you guys did definitely have some input as well, is what you're saying. Like, did you know Brandy M was going to win? Were you rooting for her?
I don't remember which. Was that Charm School?
Yeah, Brandy M, who won
Charm School. One thing. I remember that Destiny. Yeah, Brandy was cool.
Yeah, yes. She's awesome.
I remember Destiny. She won like a gig to go work for Daniela at Frankie B, which is like the opportunity of a lifetime. And she totally flaked on it.
Are you
like,
serious?
Oh,
she flaked
she
on
totally
that?
She totally flaked up. She
I
didn't. That was
can't
like the opportunity.
Believe that.
But no, because all the girls thought that it was going to launch them to stardom. Everybody's social media said, you two was like, VH1's Lacey.
Uh-huh.
Walk of Love's Brandy M. And I was looking at you guys. I go, guys, I've been on MTV and VH1 a billion times longer than you have. And I'm Ricky Rackman. I'm not MTV's Ricky Rackman or VH1's. So everybody thought this was going to be a platform for them to make it big. And they milked it. And some of them, as you know, some of them just got ridiculous. You know, Heather had all her people and she missed out a lot of opportunities because she just got too rock star.
Yeah.
Heather was very interesting because she was the one that really, and I'm not saying anything bad about her because we and her have had conversations before and I thought she was really cool, but she was interesting because that was when we were at Charm School. Remember, that was the first reality show that I'd ever done. And it was the first episode. And she said, I'll never forget this. And she said, Ricky, can I talk to you for a second? I go, yeah. So, you know, I'm not reality show guy. So she walks over there and she's like wanting to talk to me. And these cameras are following me. And I was like about to say like, dude, back off. She wants to talk to me. Not realizing she wanted to have this conversation with the cameras there. So she's saying, you know, Brandy, one of the girls, a real dumb hooker girl. She was like talking smack about me the very, very first day. And I was like, these people don't even know me. Why are they talking smack about me? And Heather was like, you know, this girl's saying a lot of bad stuff about you. And I was, and that right, that clicked. It's like, oh, she doesn't really want to talk to me. She wants to stir up something and wants the cameras there. And I didn't get that. I didn't understand the whole reality show thing. So when she said, can I go talk to you? I was going to be like, hey guys, back off. She wants to talk to me. I didn't do that. But that was all part of the show. And that was when I was realized like, oh, everything happens in front of the camera.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But actually my favorite was you and Jessica Kinney. I actually had Jessica Kinney on the podcast last month. And the thing where she like grabbed the curling iron and was using it as the microphone, that was fucking hilarious. And I asked her, I'm like, did you plan that ahead of time? She's like, no, that was actually spontaneous. And you and her were like going around. That was really, really funny. And what's interesting is Jessica Kinney went on to have like an on-air career. Like she does like the local news in Los Angeles, like all kinds of crazy stuff. Like she fucking just went for it and succeeded. But that was so funny though. Like it was interesting because you and Jessica Kinney are just like yin and yang. And you're both awesome people, but for opposite reasons, you know? And you guys just clicked on that.
The funny thing is, Jessica was somebody that I became friends with. Like we actually went out and did stuff. She's like a total nerd. And we went to like some NASA thing. We never like, it was never like, I never tried to kiss her. Or she never tried. It was like, Jessica and I were like, became friends, just like buddies. And we'd actually do stuff. And every so once in a while, you know, I'll just check to see what she's up to or something. And I, from what I understand, she's doing broadcast. And I've always thought she was very, very talented. But she was somebody that I actually became friends with, but never, ever was there any like, hey, baby. It was just like weird. It was like, I was always like, you know, I was always like a brother or something like that.
She's awesome. I really love Jessica Kinney and I actually stayed friends with her as well. And she's probably the only person on the planet that I know of that that everybody likes. Like no one has a bad thing to say about Jessica Kinney. She's amazing. But yeah, that was such a funny bit that you guys did at the reunion show of—
Yes, that wasn't planned at all. That was just
hilarious.
Like, she just told me what she wanted to do. And that's something that I happen to be very good at. So I just like, we just went with it and she was great. She was great. Yeah, she's— I haven't seen her in like 15, 20 years or something, but she was really cool. But she was really cool.
She's awesome. So let's talk about the reunion show. I mean, first of all, I feel like all of these reunion shows, everything always comes to a head and it's so wild. And to be completely honest with you, I am very surprised that I personally never got punched in the face. And, but there was always like, it just always turned into like fist fights and craziness. And, a lot of the viewers of this podcast are always asking like what exactly went down with the whole Cher and Meghan thing. I have been keeping that sort of vague. I don't really go into the details of that because my thoughts are Sharon or whoever the producers wanted that part censored for a reason. So I don't really go into like what was said because I figured it's not my place. Okay.
Sharon had every intention of doing it the whole way and she even told me.
She was going to, ahead of time, she was going to like throw the drink on her kind of thing.
And I was so happy. I was so happy because I hated Meghan.
Oh my God.
So I actually—
Wow.
The fight, I don't know if it got into a lawsuit.
Well, she just said some crazy stuff about— I do remember what she said about Sharon's husband. And I will say,
Meghan was pathetic and Sharon Osbourne rules. I will leave it at that, like that. Now, the fight that Heather got in with Daisy.
Daisy, that was fucked up. Yeah.
Okay. That I broke up and grabbed Daisy, which led perfectly into the whole me protecting Daisy thing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something that was really done like— it was just like, you know, I grabbed Daisy and I kind of protected Daisy. And that's kind of what led into the whole Daisy, because the truth is the first time that I'd ever really had a conversation with Daisy was when I went up to the house, we were shooting Daisy of Love and we were getting ready to do the first show. And that's the first time I'd ever talked to her.
Oh, wow.
I'd love to tell you that me and Daisy were friends and stuff like that, but we weren't really friends. We became very good friends.
Yeah. You guys had true chemistry on that show.
Yeah. Well, everything that when I would come off and say that I cared about Daisy, that wasn't fake. You know, I really did care about her. And some of the things with her falling for the guys, that wasn't really fake either. She really did. And I would have the same conversations with her if the cameras weren't there, you know?
Yeah.
And the truth is, you know, I was not pretending for a reality show to look after Daisy. I really cared about her. She was a great, great person. And I didn't want her with some of those scumbags. So that's why I think that show worked. And that's why I had so much fun with that show.
That totally makes sense. Had you seen Daisy's season of Rock of Love, Rock of Love 2? Had you seen that prior to—
I watched Rock of Love.
I love that.
I watched The Rock and Love Bus. I watched all that
stuff. Those were so much fun.
At first, I was like, I ain't going to watch that. And then it became the thing like we all watched it and we all talked about it. And it was great because the good thing is that there were, you know, to me, if I'm going to watch a character or watch a show, I really need, like, I really love that show on Amazon called The Boys.
Okay.
And that's because you have really distinguishable characters. You have the villain, you have this, and this person's gonna, and you say, okay, who's the first person that's gonna get drunk? And you'll be able to guess who it is, or who's the really nice person, or who's gonna cry. And you guess, and there were all these roles that these people played, and some of it was based on reality. But when you would watch it just as a fan, so when they said, hey, will you do the reunion? I'm like, yeah. They go, okay, study up. I go, oh no, I already know who all the characters are, because I really enjoyed, even though I don't watch reality. That they were probably the only reality shows I ever watched.
Yeah, and, I loved it because I loved Flavor Flav, to be totally real. Like, I was a big fan of, like, you know, Public Enemy and all of that. So when I found, and actually I started watching Surreal Life because, like, all of my heroes were, like, Vince Neil, like, all of, like, amazing people were on Surreal Life. That's how I got into it. And then Flavor Flav and yeah, the rest is history. But yeah. So did you know Bret Michaels prior to, I would imagine of that course. You did. Yeah. Cause you knew him
Yeah.
Yeah. He's great. I love Bret. He's such an awesome dude.
I knew Bret even before Headbangers Ball because of the Cat House and been to parties at his house and you know, and Bret's just a good dude. He's really, really a nice guy. And from what I understand, he was the one that suggested me to do the reunion.
So, oh, really? Oh, so that's awesome.
If that's the case, you know, it was him that got me the job at Daisy of Love as well. So, the whole show, you know, it was a good show. They were great shows. I mean, yes, I hate that MTV doesn't play music videos. And I can't say that the reality shows were the demise of MTV or VH1. But I really, you know, I don't watch reality TV. But I liked Rock of Love. I liked The Daisy of Love.
So much.
I liked all those shows a lot. I really did because I thought they were crazy.
What's funny is when I was growing up and I was such a big fan of MTV and all of that, I remember when I was a teenager and in my 20s, VH1 was like for old people. Do you remember that? Like VH1 was like the not cool one. Sure.
So, right.
Yeah, but those shows just ended up becoming like huge and iconic, as evident by the fact that I'm even doing this podcast. Like, I had no idea that people still even gave a shit about any of these shows. And then, you know, VH1 started doing the marathons and replaying them. And then, you know, Hulu and all these like streaming started doing Rock of Love and all those, you know, Charm School and Daisy of Love. And what I started realizing is that the people who originally watch these shows, who are like, you know, my age, your age, they're watching them again. But then there's like a whole new wave of young fans, like a lot of people who watch this podcast who are in their 20s that were watching Rock of Love when they're like, you know, 13 and 12 and stuff, which is hysterical. But then you get brand new people too. So it's cool that these shows are kind of, you know, they stand the test of time as far as entertainment goes. And what I really love about Bret is that he was so good at riding the line of being his funny, charismatic, kind of horn dog self without making it douchey, in my opinion. He stopped short of that. I don't know if the show could fly today, but I will say I love that Bret was always very respectful to us girls and he never like slut shamed anybody. He never had anything negative to say about any of us in all the interviews that he did. And that just shows like what an awesome dude he is.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Bret's a good. He was perfect for that show. I could not believe that it went so many seasons. I was blown away. But Bret was perfect for that show.
He really was. Who are some of your all time favorite girls? If you had to pick like two or three girls that you just like thought were like the funniest or the coolest or like the just great personalities, or you just liked them for whatever reason, as
you mean other than you, right?
What's that?
Other than you, of course.
Other than me, of course. Of course, I'm the fan. Well, hey, I know redheads. You can't go wrong with redheads. I'm making reference to your beautiful lady.
I got an awesome redhead right now.
You can't go wrong with redheads.
Of course, I was friends with Jessica. I really did like Daisy. And one girl that I became friends with that was so cool was Farrah.
I fucking love Farrah. I'm friends with her too. Well, she's amazing.
And she ended up, when I was doing one of my rides, she was like, look, I have this apartment. Why don't you just stay there? And I was like, really? She goes, yeah, I'm at work and stuff like that. You can stay at my apartment. So I stayed there and her dog was really, really cool. And she just let me stay at her apartment. And then I left early in the morning and rode and she was great. I don't talk to any of these people at all anymore. I mean, you're the only one that I've had any contact with in over a decade. Jessica was great. I'm trying to think. I thought that one girl Mindy
from A Rock of Love Bus. She came in second place.
She probably should have won.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think a lot of people thought that.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of any other. I don't think I'm in contact with any of the girls or guys. And sometimes, you know, Sinister and Chi-Chi will still send me like a message or stuff like that. And they're good guys.
I think
considering that I'm the person that I am, you would think that I'd always be in touch with all the girls, but I wasn't. I kept in touch with the guys. And I don't know what's happening with any of those girls.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, you know, and also people just get busy and it's hard to keep up with just your like real life friends, much less all these people from all these different elements of your career. It's hard to keep up and people get busy.
I would love to do a reunion, maybe on one of my shows where I get like four of you girls on.
It would be great. You should.
It would be really good. I got to figure out who to do. But it would be really fun. Me and Daisy had a falling out, unfortunately.
Yeah, so let's get into that. Now, did you and Daisy, because you guys had a great friendship and you had a very genuine connection. And for me watching the show, it was pretty clear. I always thought that was real. I didn't think that you were faking it at all. But did it ever get romantic with you and Daisy?
No. And you know what's funny? And I'm not going to say who. And I don't even know if this is true at all. This might not be true. Okay.
Okay.
But somebody said to me on the show that worked on the show that said, you know, Daisy really wishes she was with you. I don't know if that's true or not. It's probably not true. I know that I was married at the time. And so I never, ever made a pass at Daisy or anything like that. But the truth of the matter was I truly did care about Daisy. And when the show was over, I was still in touch with Daisy, and there's some things I'm not going to talk about, but I was always there for her and just thought that she was just awesome. And we had a falling out, which is another thing that I'm not going to talk about because it's personal for her and it's something that I need to talk about.
Okay.
But, you know, I hope she's doing okay.
So you guys haven't reconciled since the falling out?
And I would love to. And, because she was a great person, you know. She had her ups and downs just like we all do. And we all go through some rocky points. And she's done some things that I can't criticize because I've done some of those things before too. You know who I really liked? Remember that her real boyfriend, that guy Charles?
Oh, yes. Yes, he was actually on Charm School when we had the episode where he put the bands together. And I actually knew him. He had a band in Colorado, like a goth band that my old band Nocturne used to play shows with. But yeah, Charles, I know exactly who you're talking about.
What a cool guy. That like when that guy came on the show, I was like, I mean, I was just like, oh, Nikki Six wannabe, blah, blah, blah. And he ended up being such a good dude. Like he was really great. And, but as far as Daisy goes, we had a big falling out and haven't talked to her for I don't even know how long. And, you know, I hope the best for her, but I will tell you that in the taping of that show and for quite a long time after, we stayed in touch and we were friends and we had a falling out and I wish the very best for her.
Well, that's really nice of you. I just had London on literally last week and he was kind of walking me through everything that happened with him and Daisy. And he kind of said the same thing. He was like, I really thought she was a great person. I really liked her. And, you know, they hung out for a little bit after the taping and then they kind of had a falling out as well. And he hasn't talked to her since then. But same thing. I feel like we need like a Daisy reunion with all of us. Because I will tell you, Daisy is one of the only people, I've talked about this a lot on the podcast. She's one of the only people of all of the cast members that I was just never able to have a connection with. And so I've kind of like, you know, poo-pooed on her a little bit. I always thought she was kind of stuck up towards me. I thought she got a little arrogant in the same way that Heather did. I felt like some of these girls, like, as you said, just thought they were big, like, rock stars, A-list celebrities and stuff. And I fucking hate that shit. Like, I cannot deal with arrogance at all. But then based on what people say, like you and like London, you know, it bums me out that I wasn't able to have that connection with her because it sounds like she's pretty cool if she lets you in.
She was so cool. And there really was, you know, that was not fake that I cared about Daisy, that I really want. I mean, it sounds silly. Like if I was watching the show right now and seeing you talking to me and me saying, I really did care about the choices Daisy made, people go, that's such bullshit. But it's honestly true. Like I went into that show thinking it was so lame and ended up having so much fun and truly cared about what went on in that show, about the choices. I mean, I told her several times about people that I didn't like. And there were certain people that were on the show that I really didn't like. Like I really, and I think I called them out a couple of times on the show.
Is there anybody you want to name names or no?
Fox.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Which I've seen like at clubs here and there, and he'll come up and talk to me, and he's the same guy.
Yeah.
But he's funny.
He
but
was
I
on,
think when I saw him, he was kind of drunk.
He was on my season of I Love Money 3 with me, the one that didn't air. And he's a character for sure. He's kind of is like one of those guys, like a good looking guy, but lights are on and no one's home. And also a little arrogant too, like more so than he should be.
Right. But he's a good, I mean, if I saw him, of course, it'd be very, very cordial.
Of course,
and I've seen him like in places when I lived in LA, I'd see him every so often and he was always good.
Yeah, good deal. Well, that's cool. So one other thing I want to ask you about after that fight with Heather and Daisy. So wait, actually, let me preface that by asking you, it was Charm School was filmed first and then Daisy Love. Is that right?
Yes, because I said after Charm School, I said I wasn't going to do any of those shows anymore.
Right. That's what you said earlier. Okay, so when that fight happened with Heather and Daisy, were you just like, holy shit, you know? I mean, what happened immediately after the fight? And like, was Daisy, was she okay? Was she shaken up? Like, do you remember exactly the details of that? What's that?
Do I get sort of cut out for a second? Do I remember what happened with the fight?
Yeah. Well, so what happened immediately after the fight between Daisy and Heather? Was Daisy
people
like
separated? It was real. It was real.
Yeah.
People
you could
were
tell.
Separated. Daisy was freaking out and I stayed with Daisy and that's sort of how we kind of became friends a little bit. That's how the whole thing kind of made sense that I would do Daisy of Love with her. But it was like they were freaking out. I think I got hit in the head during that thing because I just went after it. If you watch the replay, I protected Daisy.
Yeah. Well, and it was really kind of fucked up because Heather was like a foot taller than Daisy and Daisy was like 100 pounds less than Heather. I mean, Heather is gigantic.
But it was real. It was so real.
Yeah.
You know?
And it happened so fast also.
Yeah. It was insane.
Yeah. That was totally nuts.
It was just, if you think about those reunions, they were all insane.
They were completely wild.
It was craziness.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was just some of my favorites though were definitely like the Flavor of Love reunion shows were totally nuts. Also, it was like a full audience brawl. It's like the audience versus the stage. It was always nuts on these shows.
I never saw that.
Oh God, it was wild. But so let's talk about everything after these shows in regards to your life. You've done like a lot of really cool stuff. And you started to talk about it earlier, the motorcycle rides that you do with your beautiful woman all around the country. And I also know that you're raising money for Alzheimer's. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Every year, I've always been a biker. I love riding motorcycles. I'm not really the guy that goes riding to the bars. I'm the guy that goes riding from Mexico to Canada or coast to coast 14 times. I love riding motorcycles. As a matter of fact, the day after tomorrow, I'm riding to Atlanta. It's probably going to rain. I'm still going. I don't care. So I would always, me and Gilby and Tammy and everybody, we'd always do these rides to Sturgis. And then just to make a real long story boring, my dog died and I got really depressed. I said, I'm just going to meet you guys in Utah. And I rode. And I realized, because I'm such a stress case, that it was the first time that I was on the open road and I wasn't thinking of anything. And I got like addicted to riding by myself. So then I started doing it more and more. I said, and I used to always say, my goal is to one day ride coast to coast. And I've done that 14 times. I mean, I did it a couple months ago. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to see if I can do these. Really use social media to tell me places to go and meet people and raise money for various charities. And I kept on raising more and more and more money and would pick a different charity. I would find a charity that takes all of the money. Like these rides cost me a lot of money. I'm probably going to lose probably 10 or 15 grand on this ride. But the charity money part goes straight to the charity. In 18, I had Leah Vendetta go with me. She was on season 1 of Ink Masters. And I had her go with me on the first ride, which was like, Ricky's bringing somebody with him. And it made a whole new aspect of the ride. And it was truly the best time that I ever had in my life. We raised $32,000 for Stop Soldier Suicide.
Wow, that's awesome.
So in 2019, I didn't do a real Ricky's ride because I had an Indian motorcycle in France and she's French. So we rode all around France on a motorcycle, which was unbelievable.
I can only imagine. That sounds amazing.
And then this year, we just said, okay, you know, with COVID and everything else, I'm just going to only ride 10,000 miles this summer. And I'm going to try to raise $20,000 for the Alzheimer's Association, which is such an important, important cause. We've already ridden about 8,800 miles, had a great time, tried camping with tents on the bike and brought a whole new aspect of the ride. And also riding during this pandemic was very unique. I purposely went around Sturgis because I didn't want to go to Sturgis because I went to go visit my mother afterwards. And I just didn't want to go.
Yeah.
And right now I think we're up to about 11 grand. I really want to raise that extra 9 grand and make it, you know, $20,000. I want to give the Alzheimer's Association.
That's awesome. So if everybody who's watching this right now wants to contribute, where do they go to do that?
If they go to rickiesride.com, which is RIKISRIDE.com, that's rickiesride.com. The website, unfortunately, is not updated because the problem is like I have my radio show. I do the ride. I have 2 podcasts. I also have an apparel company. And I have a hard time designating. I do everything by
myself. It's a lot. Yeah.
I don't have producers or anything like that for my podcasts. And I do everything by myself, which is pretty stupid. So I wasn't able to update the website like I should. But I'm still going to ride. I know I'm going to be riding to Atlanta Thursday by myself. And then Leah is going to ride with me from North Carolina to Daytona Beach, Florida.
Nice.
And you know, the cool thing is we didn't do it as much this year because of COVID. But we would have people follow us because I have live tracking and people would do like little fundraisers in little towns. And like we pulled into some little town and all of a sudden we pull up on this bike and there's a parade and cars and stages and a band. And I'm like, what's going on here? And they're like, they did that for you. And I'm like, oh my God.
That's so cool.
Like I got a little bit teary eyed, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really, really awesome. So it's not done with a camera crew or a crew or producer. And, you know, I get lost. I do stupid stuff. And it's just real. And it's just, I love
it. You should one of these days. You should get a camera crew to follow you on that. Because I bet that would be amazing.
I have all the footage. And the reason it's not out there yet is I just haven't edited yet. Because I have all the footage of some of the craziest stuff. I mean, you know, on one of the rides, I went to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And they had me host a Q&A with Burt Reynolds 26 days before he died. And I just found that footage. So that's going to be on the next Triple R podcast. And, you know, I love riding. I love meeting people. I love meeting people that aren't necessarily rock and roll people. People in all walks of life.
Yeah, and seeing the country.
Age, colors, everything.
I'm sure seeing the country is beautiful and really beautiful. Awesome too. Yeah.
Beautiful.
That's so rad. I love that. That's so cool you get to do that.
Yeah, one year, you know, I rode through North Carolina. I'm like, this state is so rad. And I fell in love with North Carolina. Like, you got to understand, when I lived on Laurel Canyon in Hollywood 5 years ago, I was 3 miles away from my junior high school, and elementary school. I'm a product of Hollywood, California. So the idea that I would move to North Carolina was like, I mean, I remember Tammy telling me, like, dude, you'll be back. So I moved here. I rented the house for 2 years ago. And then I said, screw that. And I ended up buying a house here and I live in North Carolina now. And
nice. Congratulations.
I love North Carolina.
It's beautiful. I love it too.
I don't talk politics with my neighbors, but other than that, everything is just great.
There you go. I love that. And so if people want to come check out your podcast, what is your podcast about and where can they find it?
I have 2 podcasts. The one that's the most successful, which I haven't put out a new episode in a long time, is called the Cat House Hollywood Podcast. And that's all the crazy stories that happened at the Cat House told by the people that were there, whether it's Axl Rose chasing David Bowie down the street or how the Vince Axel feud started or when the Black Crowes paid to play the Cat House and, you know, sneaking this one guitarist in. Because we knew he was this really cool guitarist. And he was like only like 14 and he ended up meeting all these girls and we'd always sneak him in every week. And that ended up being John 5.
Oh, you know? My God. I got to say, John 5 is awesome. I'm not trying to name drop here, but I lived right down the street from him for a while, and he and I hung out quite a bit. And he is the world's nicest person. He is so awesome. I love that dude. He's great.
If somebody said, make a list of the nicest people you know, John 5 would be pretty high up there, you know?
Yeah.
And seriously. So he's on an episode talking about that. That's and the Cat House awesome. Hollywood podcast is really great. I mean, when I started doing it, I had 6 episodes in the top 10 on iTunes, which is like
nice. Huge. Very huge.
And then the new thing that I've started doing is the Triple R podcast. And that we have every type of guest you can imagine. And sometimes it's topics. Leah is on it with me. And it's really well. And I'm really excited that we got a brand new episode, which is with Burt Reynolds.
That's going to be amazing. I definitely want to check that out. How fun. That's so cool. Well, Ricky, congratulations on everything. It sounds like you've got a lot of awesome stuff. You're beautiful.
Yes.
You're a beautiful lady who's a super talented tattoo artist.
I checked she's out the
some,
best.
She's
Let
incredible.
Me tell you something. I thought it would be, I mean, she's like truly one of the best tattoo artists. If somebody said, you're going to end up with this like gorgeous French woman that is not only like the sweetest person in the world, she's like one of the greatest tattoo artists. I'm like, you know what? Anybody can say whatever they want about me. That's like the ultimate score. But I can tell you this, okay?
Okay.
If anybody dates a tattoo artist, is married to a tattoo artist, the one thing that they know is you're never going to get tattooed by them because they're always working. And the last thing they want to do is tattoo somebody for free.
That makes sense.
So thank God for that pandemic, because when the pandemic happened, I'm like, hey, it's the 8th of May. May 8th is Motorhead Day. You're going to give me a Motorhead tattoo.
Oh, so really?
Can you see it right there?
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's so rad.
I said what I wanted was that. I said what I
you
wanted.
You have very sexy legs, by the way.
Oh, I said I wanted the Snaggletooth Motorhead logo, but I wanted to look like an old school tattoo. And it was like, bam, and she did it perfectly. So,
that's awesome.
You know, I have her doing, you know, Ricky's Ride logos or, you know, logos for different stuff. And yeah.
Awesome.
It's great.
Well, Ricky, thank you so much for coming on to the Talk of Love podcast.
Thanks,
always been such a fan of yours, not only like your professional life, but also you're just like a rad dude. So I thank you for coming on.
Thank you. And we'll do something where we'll get some of you girls on my show pretty soon.
That sounds awesome. Definitely count me in.
Okay. Bye.
All right. You talk to you later. Bye, Ricky. That was amazing. I swear to God, Ricky is like one of my favorite people in the world. I'm so grateful that he came onto the podcast. So before I let you guys go, I want to give a quick shout out to one of my contributors, Zena. She has been so, so supportive of this podcast, and I'm incredibly grateful to Zena. And she wanted me to pass on the message to you, which I am all about this. Zena is a big supporter of the Wounded Warriors Project. And if you guys remember back when I was interviewing Big John several months ago, he was a big advocate for that organization as well. So on behalf of Zena and also on behalf of Big John, please go to the website for Wounded Warriors Project. It is an incredible organization that takes care of our veterans, takes care of the guys and girls who fight for our country and need help. So definitely go check that out. And I also want to give a shout out to my contributors, Tara and Josh. So I think you guys have heard me talking about this before. I have a private Facebook group that is specifically for the contributors of Talk of Love. And Josh and Tara actually went on there and organized a Talk of Love and Rock of Love and Flavor of Love and all these shows watch party. And they did a big drinking game on Friday nights. It was really, really fun. So I want to say thank you to Josh and to Tara for organizing that. If you guys want to get in on this fun, the contributors are amazing. Great, great, great people. So you guys definitely get in on this because not only are you going to become a part of an amazing community of awesome, kick-ass people, but you'll also be supporting the podcast. So if you want to go get invited and join the Facebook page, which is, as I said, is private. All you have to do is become a contributor and the minimum is $5 a month. All the money goes to support this podcast. And all you have to do is go to the website, talkoflove.net, click on the contribute button and you can check out the rewards. There's all kinds of stuff like Skype chats with me, video shout outs, all kinds of fun stuff. Also what you can check out is if you go onto the website and you click reaction videos, you can get all of Rock of Love season 1 reaction videos with me. Basically, you'll be watching the show along with me. And it was a lot of fun to film. So you guys should definitely check that out as well. And yeah, definitely come be a part of the Contributors community. It's a lot of fun and great people. So thank you guys so much for watching. If you enjoyed the podcast, please let me know by clicking the thumbs up and also hit that subscribe button. And any information that we've talked about before, if you want to know, you know, where to go, links, all that good stuff, just look at the description below the video on YouTube and you'll have everything there that you want. So anyway, thanks you guys. I will see you all next Monday, and don't threaten me with a good time. Bye everyone.